Near-Death Experience Podcast, an ongoing exploration of spiritually transformative experiences, including NDEs and other phenomena, in order to elucidate the ineffable and better understand our spirituality. All episodes are available at ndepodcast.org. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and guests are not necessarily those of NDE Podcast, the NDERF, any sponsors, or for that matter, anyone else. In the end, the only opinion that really matters is yours.
Welcome to Near-Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World, What Near-Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side. Today we're going to share two experiences, one by a man named Donnie and another by a man named Denny. Donnie says, and this is from enderf.org, Donnie says, 12/27/2004, approximately 12:15 a.m. I was brought to the hospital by ambulance having severe chest pain, vomiting, numbness of right arm, etc. I was wheeled into the emergency room and the doctor knew right away what was going on. I was hooked up to all the monitors and the doctor was speaking to my wife in the hallway when, from my point of view, the room began to spin and collapse into a funnel shape. I mentioned this to the doctor and my wife, and then the lights went out. In my head, that is. From here, this is my wife's account as to what went on as I was gone. I began to fall off the gurney as I was sitting up at the time. The doctor ran in and caught me before hitting the ground, threw me back on the bed, laying me flat, and began CPR, all while yelling, "Code Red!" My wife was looking at the monitors. She told me that everything was flatlined for quite some time. It took a bit of time for the hospital staff to respond to the code, as the room was out of the way and around a few corners. The doctor's voice didn't carry out to the nurse station very well. I'll say we were in the middle of a good-sized snowstorm at the time, so wind noise was a factor as well. Once emergency room staff got into the room, they zapped me a couple of times before I came back and got things going. From my point of view, once the room started to spin, it was collapsing into a funnel shape and spinning faster and faster as it collapsed, kind of like sucking everything into itself. Then I was in a field of dandelions in full bloom, with the Grand Tetons in the background. I remember walking through the field, looking up at the Teton range, thinking to myself, what a strange thing this is. As I've been to the Tetons a number of times, and there isn't any field that looks close to that for many a mile. I had also noticed all the pain in my body had gone, and my vision had become very sharp and clear, but also I couldn't see much out of the sides of my eyes, some type of tunnel vision going on. Then I guess they were zapping me, and I remember my wonderful vision in front of me being destroyed. The vision was stretched out of shape and focus, like stretching a rubber band around your finger to shoot. That kept getting more out of focus. Then I remember opening my eyes with a whole crew of people hovering over me. A nurse was calling my name. I went to sit up, but they all pushed me back down and told me to be cool, lay still. I then saw my wife and asked what had happened. They told her to come over, and she told me, and I said, "No way." To which she had the doctor come over, and he told me the exact same. To which a few of the nurses said the same. At that point, I had to believe them. And one thing I remember forever is the doctor asking me if I saw the white light, to which I said no, but conveyed to him this story. And he tells my wife and I that I was there, meaning the other side. And that is the end of Donnie's account. You know, that geeky, silly part of me is grateful to hear that there are dandelions on the other side. I know that there's many people who would be bothered by the fact that there are dandelions on the other side, but I love dandelions, personally. And when I see them in my yard, I actually protect them. I'm a geek that way. I'm kind of a horticultural nerd in a lot of ways, but you know, what some people call weeds, others call a beautiful flower and life force. I mean, they're incredibly edible, they're incredibly medicinal. I mean, there's just a lot of good that comes of them. But anyway, that was kind of a silly side note, but he saw a field of dandelions. I like that. Anyway, let's look at for a moment what was happening at the moment of his death. He's in pain, suffering. I mean, just awful experience. It sounds like a heart attack. His heart, it sounds like, stopped even. You know, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose it, of course, but he says they knew what it was right away, and numbness in the right arm and all that makes it sound like like a heart attack, though I thought it was usually the left arm. Anyway, point is, he dies. And from his point of view, the whole room begins spinning and collapsing into a funnel shape. He talks about it stretching like a rubber band. And this must have been very disorienting and confusing for him. But he doesn't talk about it being terrifying or frightening. He's just observing this. And then suddenly, in the midst of this stretching, tunnel-y vision, he suddenly finds himself in the field of dandelions. And this is interesting, too. He finds himself in the Grand Tetons. So he's seeing something that he's familiar with on Earth, though he does admit that what a strange thing this is. I've been to the Tetons a number of times, and there isn't any field that even looks like this for many miles. So this is a variation on the Grand Tetons. It reminds me again of the Chronicles of Narnia book, book 7, where the kids die, and they find themselves not just in Narnia, but in the real, better Narnia. And they describe everything as being as it was in Narnia, but greater, better, bigger, more beautiful. Like the perfect version of it. And I can't help wonder if this Earth itself, if many of the features, such as perhaps the Grand Tetons, or other places of beauty, that they were created or designed after the manner of the spirit world, our heavenly home where we came from. I mean, why wouldn't we want to bring home with us to some extent? And from what I understand of these things and creation and so forth, it appears that we had every bit to do with the creation of this planet, that we have had strong influence on how it looked, how it was, as spirits, all of us spirits, however many millions, billions, trillions there were, I don't know how many, but that we all had a collective effect on it. And why wouldn't we want to design it after heaven? You know, and obviously here there are destructive weather patterns and natural disasters that are going to alter and break those ecosystems and so forth, because this is designed to be an imperfect system for the sake of the mortal experience that we sought. And it's interesting to me that Donnie is seeing the Grand Tetons, but that he's not seeing them exactly as he remembered them. If this was some kind of hallucination or dream, why would he not see them as he remembered them? What he sees is seems to be more beautiful, but clearly the Grand Tetons. Interesting, isn't it? What if this Earth, its major features, were designed to look like heaven? That we created a little heaven on Earth. And not just the Grand Tetons, but landscapes all over the planet. Perhaps that would suggest why, and again, I'm totally speculating here, perhaps that's why we gravitate to certain climates and certain places. You know, some people, I've wondered at times why people go to cold places like Alaska. I understand it's beautiful, of course it is, but there's beauty all over the planet, just different kinds of beauty. And I guess, you know, if you prefer that kind of cold beauty, then great, but I can't help wondering, why would you prefer that, though, when there is comfortable, warm beauty elsewhere, you know? And what it kind of makes me want, you know, and I'm one to talk because I'm out in the middle of a desert where what you get is desert mountain prairie, and, you know, the major biome is a chaparral type desert with sagebrush and rabbit brush as far as the eye can see, and a few junipers you know, scattered across the landscape. I'm drawn to this. And why? I don't know. But what if on the other side we became attached to different kinds of landscapes so that when we come here we feel drawn to those landscapes? Now, obviously, most of us are drawn to warm, comfortable, you know, 78 degree weather year-round everywhere kind of weather, because it's comfortable. But beyond that, just the feel and look of a place, they're very diverse, and yet we're drawn to very different places throughout. Could it be that we had places like that on the other side that we lived, that we associated in? I don't know. Total, I mean, I wouldn't even call it speculation, but just a thought, an idea about how things might be. Anyway, I found that interesting. Okay, let's go on to Denny's experience. So Denny, that was Donnie. Now we're going on to Denny. Denny shares also on nderf.org. I was being dragged, my spirit, by my two personal angels, light beings, by both arms between them. I did not go through a tunnel of light. I was immediately there. They helped me across a long white bridge. To my left, about halfway across the bridge, was a large city made of light. The colors were silver, blue, white, and silver. Interesting, it says silver twice there. Probably very silver, I guess. Anyway, it looked like crystal light. I was getting better as we approached the end of the bridge and entered into a large white dome at the end of the bridge. I sat there as my two personal or guardian angels communicated with me, the others seated on the circumference of the interior of the dome. Let me read that again. That was a little bit of a confusing sentence. I sat there as my two personal or guardian angels communicated with the others seated on the circumference of the interior of the dome. So there are others there that the two angels are communicating with. The communication was telepathic. I heard the voices, but did not speak. I knew that they were talking about me. They were deciding if I should be admitted into the city and then into the heavens, or return to Earth. The general consensus among the beings there, including my two guardians, was that I should stay. A leader among them stood and asked me directly, "You have free will, and the choice to stay or return to Earth is yours. I said, I have a daughter that must know who I am, and also Earth is in a lot of darkness right now. They need as many people with good-heartedness within them, alive and on the Earth right now. For these reasons, I would like to return and complete my mission. Immediately, I felt renewed strength. I stood and was guided by four guardian angels from the dome. As I passed the city, I could sense all of them there. I sent love from my heart to them. I felt at least 10,000 other hearts return that love to me. This made me even more renewed as I left with my four guardian angels, two on each side of me. I woke up in ICU after that. There were birds on my windowsill there. The doctor said that it was unusual for them to be there in the winter snow and cold winds, but that they were there the whole time I was. I was then moved into a regular hospital room for 3 days of observation. I could feel that I had angel wings on my back, so I sat up in bed for 3 days so that I would not lay down on my invisible wings. They were the same color as the city I had seen. After 3 days, the feeling of the wings went away, and my wife came and picked me up for the trip home. I still have diabetes and three other diseases. I completed massage school, but have been too ill after working for 9 months at that position. I go up and down in my health, but I did get to meet my daughter at her older age. And she knows who I am. I told her about my experiences, and her mother and her family think that I am crazy. My daughter is 12 this May, and she thinks I'm crazy too, but I guess I'm still alive to serve the greater good. I have a good heart, and have always worked in service of others as a profession. I hope that this helps others in facing their challenges in life. I am still in a lot of physical pain each day, but I believe it is serving a higher purpose. I don't know what all the answers are, but this has been my experience. Thank you for allowing me to share it. And that is the end of Denny's experience. Okay, this story is an example of how people tend to leave out details that tend to be implied by some of the things they say. You know, the kind of thing where you have to read between the lines to get the full story. Clearly, Danny was in the hospital, in the ICU. We don't know what happened, but it appears that it had something to do with diabetes, and he ends up in the hospital, and is unconscious for some time, obviously, because he has this experience. And at first, he says he's being dragged by his two personal angels by both arms. My first image was one of, police officers dragging a villain to jail. But then as he describes increasing in strength as he crosses this bridge, I'm realizing that probably he is leaving his body still feeling weak and sore and in pain, or at least weak anyway. And so he's needing somebody to prop him up. This sounds very transitional to me. There is, in many cases, seems to be a transitional period where somebody leaving their body, they are out of the body, but they are still in such a bodily state of mind that they are still weak, or they are still sometimes even in pain. That's kind of rare to have pain, but this weakness is often the case. Sometimes things very physical are happening, especially in distressing experiences where somebody's in fights and they can feel the impact and so forth, and and sometimes there's not pain involved, sometimes there is. Anyway, everything feels very physical, to them during this transition time. But as Denny says, as he gets across the bridge, his strength is returning. And in fact, as he sends out love and it comes back to him, there's even more strength and more energy returned to him. He's beginning to fully, I don't want to say fully, because I mean, that would probably take more than just what he experienced in this whole experience, but he's beginning to transition. Okay. Anyway, so he's guided by his guides, or he's helped by his guides across this bridge, and he senses that there are others there. And it's unclear, as he says, that his angels are speaking to some others near a dome at the end of the bridge. I don't know if this is some kind of gazebo, if it's a building, or if it's just the sky domes in some way. I don't know. But he says that I sat there as my two personal or guardian angels communicated with the others seated on the circumference of the interior of the dome. Now, who are these others? I mean, it's kind of a broken story in a lot of ways, in the sense that, wait, who are these other people? You know, it's, I think a lot of this, and I get this in a lot of these experiences, is that in the person's mind, they are communicating with words more than what the words can carry. And that wouldn't make sense, except in this field, in this literature, we find that people feel like they're communicating more than they are, and even admit they can't communicate at all. Have you ever tried to tell somebody a dream? And even especially, I should say, especially when you're describing the emotions that you're experiencing in the dream and your experience around what's happening. Maybe the description, if it were just videoed and showed in a video form, would not make any sense. But the, you know, as you're trying to describe your dream, you're like, but it was more than that. It was like, there's just this feeling of I don't know, this emotion of, I don't know, this sense of, you know, and you just struggle like that to communicate the emotions and the experience, because the, you know, just flat out what is happening, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, doesn't add up. And I think that's a little bit what happens in near-death experiences. Partly because sometimes people are not seeing other people. They're not hearing anything or seeing anything, but they are experiencing it in some kind of deeper way. Or, and this I think is more often, they are experiencing it on every one of the five senses, but that there are additional 50 senses that they can't describe. And so they try. And what happens is that you get what I would consider a broken story, something where there are details left out that they can't fill in because they don't have the words for them. So when he describes here his guardian angels speaking with others on the interior of the dome, if we had an interview, maybe we would be able to establish, oh, well, they were beings of of light, that they were this or that. But I suspect that even then it would come out, well, what did their faces look like? Did their features match someone that you're familiar with? Or who would you describe them as looking vaguely similar to, in order to get some kind of physical description? And chances are they wouldn't be able to do it. They couldn't say he looked a little bit like, you know, a short, tall, you know, I mean, short, thin version of Brad Pitt or what, you know. They can't always do it, because what you're trying to do in that case is you're trying to place it in a very physical sensation sort of a way. And that can't always be done. And so, you know, like I said, it comes out as a broken story. And we can fill in a lot of the gaps, but we can't fill in all of them. We can gather by reading between the lines that there are other people there because the spirits are communicating with someone, that there are many, many others there, at least 10,000 others there. Yet there doesn't seem to be an indication of him seeing those people or being in their presence per se. And for all I know from reading this, he could be sensing 10,000 other hearts from this city in the distance. Here's how he describes the city. He says, immediately I felt renewed strength. This is from the love, he's crossing the bridge. He's feeling increased strength as he decides he wants to return. And he says, I stood and was guided by four guardian angels from the dome. As I passed the city, I could sense all of them there. Who is them? Well, the biggest hint we have is what he says next. I sent love from my heart to them. I felt at least 10,000 others return that love to me. Sounds like it's coming from this city. That he's emitting this love somehow, and then it comes back to him from 10,000 or more others. Beautiful. And he says, this made me even more renewed as I left with my four guardian angels, two on each side of me. Interestingly, he keeps calling them guardian angels instead of guides or something. You know, and at the beginning, they are holding him up by both arms because he doesn't have the strength, apparently, to walk on his own or to travel on his own. And by now, they're more like flanking him as guardians would, like bodyguards would. And what they're guarding him from, I don't know. What they're guarding him to, back to his life, obviously. But then he wakes up in the hospital. He just wakes up. And if you were to ask him, I don't know, but if you were to ask him, tell me about getting back into your body, he would probably say, that's very difficult because I can't really quantify what, you know, that transition was from the walking with my four guardian angels to suddenly waking up. There was things in between that, but I can't put it to words. I don't know. I shouldn't put words in his mouth like that, but there seems to be a lot of this broken story aspect, which is to suggest that there is a lot of things that words can't do for the story. And trying to add more words would probably just lead somebody off a different direction. So, very interesting. I do find it interesting that there were birds on the windowsill outside. And this is wintertime, there aren't many birds about anyway, but these ones stayed throughout the whatever operation or procedure bringing him back. Doctor says they were there for the whole time, which is kind of interesting. Why would that be? I don't know. Were they symbols of his guardian angels? Were they taking on a form of birds? I don't know. Then this interesting little tidbit about his sense of having angel wings. Now, this whole question of angel wings. Do angels have wings or do they not? And the more I study near-death experiences, the more I realize that it is not so dichotomous as all that. It's not that either they have them or they don't. It's that some do, some don't. Are they needed? Not really, but is there a reason for them? Yes. And what is that reason? I don't know. There a lot of this, a lot more of this, you know, reading between the lines things, because we don't have the words. They don't have the words, and we certainly don't have the words as those who haven't experienced Denny's experience. So we've just got to throw these ideas around and hopefully better understand this by the exploration of these experiences. I do want to touch, further on why Denny came back, because I think that's kind of the summum bonum of the whole experience, what it all comes down to, because he was given a choice. There's this consensus taking place that, yeah, I think you probably better stay. I think it's your time. But he's told, you have free will, you can choose. And he says, I have a daughter that must know that who I am. And also, Earth is in a lot of darkness right now. And this is the point that I want to share, which I think is interesting. He's telling his guardian angels this. They need as many people with good-heartedness within them, alive and on the Earth right now. For this reason, I would like to return and complete my mission. Isn't that interesting? Given the choice, feeling this gushing of love, yet Denny feels this sense, the Earth is in a lot of, you know, most of us, when we see a place in darkness, we say, I'm staying away from there. Forget that. I'm not going there. That's too dark. It's too, you know, hard, too painful. I don't want to go there. I'm not going. But that's not what Denny says. He says, the world is in a lot of darkness right now. We need as many people with good-heartedness within them, alive on the Earth right now. Now, can guardian angels do a lot? Sure. Can spirits on the other side do a lot for Earth? Absolutely. But as Denny says, we need as many people alive and on the Earth right now. Why? Why do they have to be alive? I don't know. But I think there is more good that we can do than what we think we can do. There is purpose for our being here. If you are still breathing, if you are still alive right now, it is for a purpose. You are not an accident. Your being here is not an accident. If you've had a bunch of close calls that make you think, maybe I'm supposed to die because it keeps trying to happen, I think you're looking at it backwards. I think that you're accident prone and you should have died physically, but you have a purpose to fulfill and you are not to be taken before your time. You are not to be taken before your time. And if you're living out a life where it's that just feels without purpose, feels without meaning, there is a reason that you are still here, because that purpose, that mission is still coming. Now, are you missing opportunity? I don't know. I can't speak for your individual circumstances. Some people get to the other side and they say, oh, I didn't do anything worth living for. I didn't do anything to change the vibration of the planet or the joy around me to provide happiness wherever I was. I didn't do anything, hardly, for that. I need to go back. And that's often why people do go back. If we were to die today from accident or whatever, would we experience that? I hope not. I really hope not. But let me tell you right now, the best thing that you can do to prevent that scenario of getting on the other side and realizing, man, I could have done so much more. I can see now, I could have done so much more. You are still alive today. That means you can still do so much more. I don't care if you're in a hospital bed, that you can't move, that you can't talk, that you can't do any of the things that make it obvious that you can make a difference. If you have none of that, there is still much good that you can do. And if you have the ability to see, hear, and walk, there is so ridiculously much good that you can do. You have a light within you that is here on this earth to counteract the darkness that is in the earth. These are troubled times. I haven't talked about it much, partly because I, you know, keep hoping that by the time these things air in 3 weeks or whatever, that you know, we'll be back at work and we'll be back in fairly normal life again. But as it's going, we just keep getting deeper and deeper into this COVID-19 lockdown and, you know, we're to the point where stores are starting to be limited in what they are allowed to sell. It has to be essentials. It's not that way here, but there's a few states where that's taking place. It's very difficult right now. There is darkness in the earth. And I don't suggest that this is some kind of conspiracy going on. I don't know. I'm not in a position to know. But whatever's going on, there is a great deal of fear on the earth. Whether founded or not, there is a great deal of fear. Let me tell you a little experience that I had not too long ago. I had a friend nearby that needed a ride to the emergency room, and it didn't turn out to be anything life-threatening. It was a bout of vertigo. He'd never experienced it before, and certainly not on that level where he could hardly even walk and so forth. But it scared him. It frightened him. Another person that I know well was living in one of the cities that had an earthquake recently. Not one to knock down buildings, but to knock, you know, things off of shelves and have things falling and crashing around. This was shortly after the initial lockdowns where schools were shut down and they were starting to put limitations on what you could buy in the stores. And then this earthquake came. And hearing this friend talking, I was realizing that there is more to all of this than just dealing with a sickness. And obviously it's all of that, but it's also a great deal of fear that people are experiencing. When this friend of mine that needed to go to the emergency room talked to me, he was almost in tears. He's like, "I'm terrified, Chaz. I'm terrified. I don't know what's going on. I'm terrified." And all I could do was sit there and hold his hand and, you know, escort him, take him to the emergency room where he could be reassured, "You're okay. You're all right." And for him, that was a big deal. For me, it was, you know, in terms of, you know, so my morning, you know, I ended up taking him to the hospital. I mean, it was a Saturday. I didn't even have any plans. You know, we were in lockdown after all. And he just needed a little bit of help. But for him, that was big. For me, it was very small. It was not a big deal to do that. But for him, it was very big. My point in that is that there are things you can do. Get on your favorite social media. Find someone who's a little bit scared and find a way to reassure them. Find a way to send them love. You know, whether it's contacting them by phone and just say, "Hey, I, you know, heard this thing today that made me feel like things are going to be okay." Whatever it is, be a light on this in these dark times. Honestly, as an optimistic person, I didn't notice the fear. I mean, other than, you know, suddenly the stores are out of toilet paper and I just laughed and I'm like, "Come on, guys, that's just silly. Why are we raiding the stores? That's ridiculous." And I kind of laughed it off at the time, which maybe was in bad taste, but I didn't do it publicly. So I wasn't making fun of people to their faces or anything, but I was kind of like, "Yeah, whatever, you guys." But it wasn't until I saw the fear and heard the fear in people's voices and in their eyes and so forth that I realized this is more than just about sickness. It's about individuals. It's about their fears. And if there is something I can do to reassure them, to hold their hand, to just say, "Hey, I'm here for you. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I am here for you." That is light. That is what we are here to do. I don't care how small it seems to you. That is what we are here for. Look for those opportunities to be light, because that's what you're here for. In Betty Eady's near-death experience, she is on the other side and she's being taught about the purposes of our lives and how we all come for a purpose. She is shown a vagrant, somebody living on the streets, just drunk on a bench, laying there, you know, drunken and in a stupor, if you will. And this man is on the street, and her guide says, "What do you see?" She says, "I see a drunken bum." And they, and her guardian says, "Let me show you this person on the other side." And she, and this person is taken from their body in this drunken stupor. Their spirit is brought out for just long enough for her to see one of the most glorious, beautiful spirits that she has ever seen. And by this time in her experience, she's seen many. And this is one of the brightest that she has seen. And her guardian says, "This man, this glorious spirit, was willing to take on the terribly challenging, difficult life mission of being what you call a drunken bum on the street for one purpose. Because there is a man that is going to make eye contact with this drunken bum in a short time. And that eye contact will change the life of this man, and he will do great things on this earth because of just making eye contact with this drunken bum. And after that time, this drunken bum will die and return to the glorious heaven that he came from. That is his life mission, and it's going to change the world." You guys, we don't understand. We don't see it. We're seeing the backside of the tapestry. If we could see the other side, we would see how glorious and how beautiful our choices are here on this planet. We are needed on this planet now to bring light. Never underestimate the good that you can do. So, if you would like to contact the podcast, you can do so by either emailing chaz@ndepodcast.org, neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com, or by emailing john@ndepodcast.org. You can support the podcast either by purchasing my book, Life in the Spirit World, or by going to patreon.com and becoming an ongoing monthly contributor. That's patreon.com/ndepodcast. And with that, thank you guys so much again for listening.